from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a special Eclipse edition of Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Well, the U.S. Senate is back in Washington after a two-week break, and the House returns tomorrow. So what will be the focus for this week?
What I can tell you is that, as the president made clear to Prime Minister Netanyahu, we got to see some changes in the way they're prosecuting these operations, or we're going to have to think about making changes in our own policy towards Gaza.
Well, Israel will be front and center. That was White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby yesterday on ABC This Week. Oklahoma Senator James Lankford returned from Israel this weekend, and he'll join us in just a moment. Speaking of Israel, despite continued pressure from the White House, Israel is not backing down from its mission of securing its country.
The movements of those soldiers doesn't indicate anything special. We are committed to our war aims, to destroy Hamas, to bring home the now 133 hostages, and to ensure that Gaza doesn't pose a threat to us anymore.
That was Avi Hyman, a spokesman for the Israeli government. We'll be joined a little bit later by Carolyn Glick, an advisor to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is in D.C. this week. Also, the Senate will soon have the impeachment articles for Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. What can we expect from that? We're going to talk about that as well. Also, former President Donald Trump is getting some criticism for a statement he released this morning outlining his position on abortion.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
Is the protection of the unborn just for the states? We're going to talk about that on this edition of Washington Watch. And the House may be dealing with Marjorie Taylor Greene's effort to vacate the Speaker's chair. But are other members willing to follow her lead? We're going to talk about that on today's edition as well. And finally, has the church in America lost its power and influence because of a desire to be accepted? Phil Hudson-Piller, senior pastor of Influence Church in Anaheim Hills, California, is here on his new book, It's Midnight in America. So for the next hour, we're going to navigate the conflict and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
You shouldn't be shipping more weapons to the Netanyahu government when they're not meeting their commitments, including the delivery of humanitarian aid, or what they're not complying with international law.
That was Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, the Senate's most outspoken critic of Israel on CBS Face the Nation yesterday, which, by the way, marked the six-month anniversary of the deadly Hamas terrorist invasion into Israel. Now, over the weekend, the Israeli military withdrew from some parts of southern Gaza in preparation for what many expect to be the last major offensive in the war, and that would be Rafah. Now, the Biden administration is putting pressure on the Israeli military and the Israeli government to back off completely. But there's a clear understanding, and it's being communicated by Israeli leadership, that they have to eliminate the threat of Hamas. And Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma was in Israel last week, met with Israeli leadership, saw very much the same thing that I saw a few weeks ago when I was in the country of Israel. And he's going to be joining us in just a moment to give us his takeaways from his trip, and also what we may see in Congress this week as the supplemental bill that passed the Senate is going to be over in the House. The problem with that is that contains funding for Ukraine as well as for Israel, and there's not the appetite and support for funding Ukraine, given the billions of dollars that have gone to that country. However, as the challenges for Ukraine increase, as Putin increases his presence and the possibility of him taking Kyiv, we may see the House going along with the supplemental funding as Ukraine is about to run out of funds. Do we have Senator Lankford? All right, let's go. We have Senator Langford now. He, as I said, he just returned from Israel. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Homeland Security Committee and the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Langford, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to see you again.
All right, so let's talk about first about your trip in Israel. A lot happening there as the administration seems to be backing away, the Biden administration backing away from their support of Israel. What were your observations while you were in country?
Yeah, incredibly painful to be able to be there in the season. It's always a war for anyone who's traveled in Israel before. You see lots of tourists. Obviously, those folks aren't there because it's a war going on. I literally traveled from tip to tip through Israel, was at the Egypt border. I was a half mile from Gaza. I was all the way up on the border with Syria and with Lebanon. People lose track of the fact that there's been 4,000 rockets fired from the north. Everyone's focused on what's happening in Gaza. But Hezbollah continues to be able to fire rockets, and they continue to be able to violate the UN agreement to be able to keep that buffer zone between Israel and between any kind of military force. It's amazing to me that President Biden is chastising Israel right now for them trying to be able to defend themselves from the attacks that come from Gaza. But I hear absolute crickets about Hezbollah and their march to the south right now and their militarization of that zone that's supposed to be demilitarized.
Yeah, Senator, I want to ask a little bit about this double standard that the Biden administration is applying to Israel. They've ramped up their rhetoric and their pressure on Israel since the drone strike that killed, I think, seven relief workers there in Gaza. And now they're demanding action. But, you know, history is a stubborn thing. In on August 29th of 2021, as the United States bungled their withdrawal from Afghanistan, you might recall the Biden administration fired a drone attack, and it killed 10 civilians. And there was no action taken for those involved in that. So is there a double standard here being applied to Israel?
Yeah, there is a double standard. Obviously, it's a wartime. There are painful loss of life for civilians that are out there. That's the painful difficulty of any war in any place. We've experienced that as Americans, that we do everything we can to be able to protect innocent life. Israel is also trying to protect innocent life. At the same time, the Biden administration is putting pressure on Netanyahu to be able to have a ceasefire and to stop and allow terrorists to be able to remain in Rafah when we know there are thousands of terrorists that are literally hiding out in that last spot. We really need to have pressure on Lebanon to be able to back up Hezbollah. We need to have pressure on Qatar. The Qataris could put pressure on Gaza and Hamas today and could release all of those hostages, but Qatar is choosing not to do that. So the pressure really needs to be placed on the people that could actually end this war. Rather than demanding Israel as a ceasefire, let's demand Hamas as a ceasefire. The Houthis have a ceasefire. Hezbollah has a ceasefire. Qatar uses its real leverage that it has to be able to get those hostages out. That's where the pressure should be.
But is it, Senator, the fact that Israel is the only adult in the room and the only rational one that we can put pressure on and who will listen to us and the others won't? And so we just let them do as they please because we know we can't control them?
No, it's just the international trend. Quite frankly, the Biden administration is falling into the UN rhetoric right now of Israel is always the problem. If you go to the UN, Israel is always the problem. Israel is always the problem. The problem is Iran in the Middle East. They are the destabilizing force. They're funding the Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah. The problem are the Qataris right now, that they're not using the leverage that they really have. So don't fall into the UN rhetoric that this always Israel is the problem. Israel is our ally. We need to stand with her. We need to help in every way we can to be able to help in the threat of terrorism that's coming at them. But we need to also use our leverage out there and not just fall into the world voice.
You know, Senator Langford, you and I were on a trip to Israel about a dozen years ago, and I've been there multiple times. I know you have as well. This time when I went, remarkably different in that I think there is a real sense. I mean, strangers coming up to me on the street just thanking me for being in Israel. There is a real sense that Israel is standing alone in the world as America is their last friend. And in part, what I heard when I was there representing really evangelicals in America is that evangelicals in America are really the last ones standing with Israel.
Yeah, Tony, it's really stark. When I met with multiple different Israeli leaders there, they were grateful for American officials to be there. They were grateful to be able to hear people in America are supportive of Israel. We do want to end terrorism. We understand what it's like to be attacked in a threat of terrorism. And we also understand that when the protests were happening in Iran in the streets just a couple of days ago, they were stomping on Israeli flags and American flags. For some reason, there are people here in the United States that seem to just look away, and we've forgotten the lessons of 9/11, that there are people in that region that intensely hate our freedom, that intensely hate us as Americans. And as is often repeated, America is the great Satan and Israel is the little Satan, but they're really trying to be able to come after us. And we'll do that in every opportunity. So America actually strengthens the hand of Hamas when President Biden steps out and pushes back against Israel and says, back up. What he's really doing is saying to the whole region, wait it out, and America will give up on this, and Israel will have no allies, and then we can run over Israel. So the folks in Israel that I talked to were really grateful to be able to see folks on the ground and saying, nope, there are Americans that do stand with you, including evangelical Christians and others, especially a lot of Republicans that are speaking out clearly to say we're going to stand with Israel.
So, Senator Lankford, major takeaway, main takeaway from your time in Israel last week.
The war is still ongoing. Threats of terrorism is still very real. We lose track of that here because it's not in the news as much, other than people just attacking Israel for anything that may occur there. But Israelis still continue to face very real threats. There's about 63,000 Israelis that have had to pull away from the northern border because of the constant attacks from Hezbollah. So we literally have internally displaced persons in Israel as well. And for those families that I've met with, that their loved ones are currently hostages in Gaza right now, they want those hostages freed. And it needs to be the Qataris and Hamas and those individuals that know where they are to be able to get them out and understand this war can come to an end when Gaza is actually run not by a terrorist organization and when those hostages come out.
Yeah, in the hostage situation touches almost every family in Israel. Everyone knows someone affected by that. Final question for you, Senator Lankford. This week, articles of impeachment may be coming over from the House. They're supposed to be walked over for the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. What do you anticipate coming from that?
I anticipate they'll come over on Wednesday. We'll do the actual swearing in the Senate on Thursday, and promptly Senator Schumer will try to table this. That's never occurred in American history, to be able to table an impeachment. And so we'll have a protracted back and forth fight on the Senate, whether that we're actually going to have the trial at all, or whether like Democrats in the Senate are going to be, for the first time in American history, to say we're not even going to have the trial, we're not going to allow evidence to be able to come out. Quite frankly, Senator Schumer doesn't want to have a conversation about how chaotic the border really is, and he's trying to find every way he can to silence that.
Well, I would say I'm surprised, but I'm not. Under the Schumer regime, there's been a lot of first. Senator James Lankford, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Yeah, good to see you, Tony. Continue to pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
We certainly will. In fact, folks, we're just now launching this. A lot of the information is not yet out, but I was talking with actually one of the prime minister's advisors early this morning. May the 19th, mark your calendars. That is a Sunday. It is the Sunday following the 76th anniversary of Israel as a nation, their celebration. We are going to encourage churches. We are encouraging churches to hold a Stand With, Pray for Israel Sunday. I'll have more about that later. Stick with us. We're back with more.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. And by the way, I didn't get a finish because I was up against that relentless break. If you would like to join us in standing with praying for Israel, text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. May the 19th, mark your calendar. Pastors will have more information for you. And if you want to encourage your pastor to have your church participate, it's real simple. We're just going to pray for Israel on that day. Pray for and stand with Israel. As this administration is moving away from them, we want to stand with them. And so text the word Israel to 67742, and you can be a part of that effort. We're going to have thousands of churches across the country joining us in that effort. All right, members of the House of Representatives, as I mentioned earlier, are returning tonight and tomorrow after a two-week recess that many hoped would kind of lower the temperature following last month's fierce budget battle. But Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene continues to indicate she'll push ahead with her plan to force a vote on terminating House Speaker Mike Johnson's speakership. But with Republicans holding such a narrow House margin, is this a wise move? I mean, what will this lead to? I mean, I think what it would lead to is a Democrat becoming the Speaker of the House. I mean, this is not smart, not at all. Joining me now to discuss this and much more is someone who's been filling in for me for the last week, which I'm very grateful for, is Jody Heiss, FRC Action President and Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council. Jody, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Tony.
And by the way, thanks so much for filling in for me last week. I know you're busy because you also launched a book that was out last week on election integrity. Tell our listeners about it real quick.
Yeah, Tony, thanks. Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People was released last week. We're really excited with and humbled by the tremendous support that it's received all across the country. Look, I don't know. There are so many issues we're dealing with, Tony, across our country. But certainly one of the key issues, absolutely, is election integrity. And if we as a country lose that and miss that, then we are in serious, serious trouble. And so this book comes out of a lot of experience of being on the tip of the spear in many regards during my time in Congress. And it just offers some practical ways that we can address this problem and make sure our votes count. One legal vote cast, one legal vote counted. That's what it's all about. So really encourage people to go out and get a copy of this book, Sacred Trust.
And so far, the Washington audience has helped put this book at the top of the list. So it's doing quite well.
Right out of the gate, we're number one new release at Amazon and already in the top sellers list at Amazon. And again, we're just really grateful for that. But it's an extremely important topic and one that people are very concerned about and interested about, certainly in this election cycle.
Well, let's talk about important topics. This week, as the House returns, the motion to vacate once again center of attention. But this time it seems as though Marjorie Taylor Greene, who you actually served with as a part of the Georgia delegation, may be walking alone. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of appetite for throwing the House back into chaos.
Yeah, this is a frightful consideration. I think it would be absolute disastrous for our entire party, both currently as well as going into an election cycle. I see no value in this whatsoever. I understand there's some frustration with the speaker. I get that. But you've got to look at the broader picture, and doing such a drastic move as a motion to vacate at this point with such a razor thin majority has no good end to it whatsoever. And I urge Marjorie Taylor Greene to not move forward with this.
Let me give you a scenario, Jody, and tell me if this is a potential outcome here. So we know what happened in January when they were trying to get a speaker. I think it was 15 rounds they went through finally to get to Kevin McCarthy day upon day. And then when he was ousted, which I was opposed to and stated here on the program, I thought it was a bad idea, even though I didn't agree with Kevin on everything, in fact, a lot of things, but did not think it would be good for the House. And then they spent, I guess, over 2 weeks without a speaker, doing no business whatsoever until they could find a consensus candidate. And that's when Mike Johnson emerged. And I understand, as you just pointed out, there are people frustrated. But with, you know, a conference as diverse as the Republicans have, there's going to be differing opinions there. But that said, if he's ousted with that razor-thin majority, and they go into this stalemate with nothing happening, and then let's say there's a terrorist strike in America, God forbid. But if it happens, there are going to be some Republicans that are in marginal districts that Biden may have won in the last presidential that are going to be eager to try to get a speaker. And I think would be easy pickings for a moderate Democrat and Democrats to gather around a moderate and put a Democrat speaker in the House. First time that would ever have happened, but it could happen.
It could happen, to be honest with you, Tony. I don't know that there are any moderate Democrats in Washington, D.C. right now. It would be very difficult to find one.
Well, there might be Quasar, Henry Quasar.
Quasar is the only one that comes to my mind on that. Beyond him, I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it. You know, but the danger and all this. So to answer your question, yeah, I mean, there is a possibility of that scenario playing out. It would be, I think, the end of the political career for any Republican to vote that way. But again, we're only talking one or two people. It is a flip of the coin what could potentially happen in all of this. And so don't risk it. I mean, this is horrible timing. So much is at stake. And if the scenario that you pointed out actually were to take place, it would give the majority in the House, the Senate, and the White House to the Democrats, right, during a time when the Democrat Party is being run, really, by the radical extremist left wing. And so the end result of that would be disastrous.
It would be very little Republicans could do to stop the agenda being advanced by the left. As you said, they'd have control of the Senate, effectively control of the House, the agenda, and, of course, the White House. Not a good move. Congressman Jody Heiss, always great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony. Thank you.
All right, folks, go out and pick up a copy of Sacred Trust and help help keep Jody top of the list. It's an important read, lots of good information, and the timing could not be better. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead on this Monday afternoon.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us again on this Monday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, if you'd like to join with us as we pray and stand with Israel on May the 19th, text Israel to 67742. That's Israel, 67742. Well, the anti-Semitic message is not the only message out there from the left. It's also a message attacking Christians. And as this comes, unfortunately, too many in the church have adopted a spirit of fear, with some even believing that appeasement is better than courage and conformity preferred to obedience. And that's the message of Pastor Phil Hoppenviller, who lays out in his new book, It's Midnight in America. He's the senior pastor of Influence Church in Anaheim Hills, California, and he joins us now to discuss how Christians can confront fear and embrace courage, a message that I love. Pastor Phil, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Oh, thank you so much, Tony. Good to see you. And I love taking in part of your show just before I got on. So you're always hitting a home run, and you're standing in the trenches, and I love that about you, and I love it about just what's happening in our world. I really am encouraged. I know a lot of people go, how can you be encouraged? Well, because I believe in a sovereign God.
That's right.
And that helps.
And when you're abiding in him, you draw your strength and power from that. And I see that. I read your website every day with the news that you put out. Now, you write that the church is so hungry to be accepted by the world. By the way, I believe what you say because I see it myself. So hungry to be accepted by the world that it has relinquished its power. It's forfeited its birthright and accepted its place as non-essential. Talk about that.
Well, you know, what happened during the pandemic for most of us was that initially we kind of stepped back. We didn't know what was happening. But it didn't take very many weeks, about 2 weeks, for me to go, this is a con job. Something's going on here that's not right. And the overreach was incredible. And when I saw pastors around me that seemed to be just giving up and just saying, well, there's nothing to do. We just have to conform. I was really alarmed. And I just said, we're going to open, we're going to stand on the conviction, number one, that Caesar is not king, and that we have a constitution that gives us the rights to stand as well, regardless what the consequences were. And because of that, you know, I began to preach messages, began to really build courage and not fear into people. And it really paid off in our congregation. It paid off in the people that also came into our church during that time period, and they were starved for solid leadership that would stand in the middle of struggles and difficulties.
Well, it's very important if we want the people in the pews to do certain things that it needs to be modeled in the pulpit. I mean, if we want believers, you know, rank and file to be courageous, the leaders have to be courageous.
Oh, it's exactly right. You know, I think about this was from Canterbury Tales. It kind of takes me back into college, but it said, if the gold rusts, what will happen to the steel? And if the priest fails, what will happen to the people? And it's a great line because it kind of reminds us leadership is critically important. And without leadership that stands strong, what do you really have? And so I really build a case for that. One of the chapters that I really love in the book is called America Needs More Blacksmiths. And I use the story of the Philistines invading the land, and they removed all the blacksmiths. So they took away the weaponry. Israel couldn't make weapons anymore. They couldn't sharpen their tools. So they were now militarily crippled, and they were agriculturally crippled. And it was an effective thing. And so in America, if you take away, for example, First and Second Amendment, you're doing exactly the same thing. You take away free speech, what do you have? You censor things, you have fake news. All these things are weapons that we can use in addition to our spiritual armor, the power of the Holy Spirit, prayer, all of those things. But we also are co-laborers with God, and we have some things in our hand that we need to be effectively using on a daily basis.
So, Pastor Phil, how can folks get a copy of your new book, It's Midnight in America?
You know, the easiest way is to go onto Amazon or another platform like that, whether it's a Barnes & Noble or a Target, and you're going to find it available there. It'll be quick and easy, be at your home in the next day. And I think you're going to find it a really great read. Everyone that's already read it have just been just pouring over the pages, especially the chapter on Where's American Biblical Prophecy.
Pastor Phil, before I let you go, talk also about your organization, because you've got a daily news source that you put out there. And as I said, it's in my inbox every morning. I look at it. I think it's well done. Tell our viewers and listeners how they can tap into that.
Well, it's AmericanFaith.com, AmericanFaith.com, and we provide 30 to 40 stories every single day that you can read and be a part of. There's a podcast there. We have an annual gala that this year, Laura Trump will be our speaker, and we have about 22 million people on it right now.
It's exciting. It's great to see. I've watched that take off from the start, and I commend you for that. As a pastor, being involved in modeling what we want Christians in America to do, to be informed, to be engaged, what we call here at Family Research Council, pray, vote, and stand. We got to pray for our country. We've got to vote of biblical values that God has given us in His Word, and we need to stand for those values no matter what.
Amen. Such a great line, and I love that. And when we stand, guess what? We've done all we can. The Bible says
that's
in
right.
Ephesians 6, you take a stand and you're going to, that's what, then God slips in, comes in, and He becomes Jehovah Sneaky and works miracles nobody ever imagined.
That's right. But we have to stand first. Pastor Phil, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tony.
And folks, go out and get a copy of Pastor Hudson Pillar's book, It's Midnight in America. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Carolyn Glick more on what's happening in Israel in the relationship with the United States. So don't go anywhere. We're back in just a minute.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to be back in the chair behind the microphone. I again appreciate Jody Heiss filling in for me last week. And I do want to encourage you once again to join with us on May the 19th for a special Sunday in which we will be praying for and standing with Israel. And as I mentioned, I was talking with one of the advisors to the prime minister this morning over in Israel, letting them know that we are standing with them. And they're encouraged to know that the Bible-believing Christians are standing with Israel in spite of what this administration is doing and in spite of the media putting the spin that it has on the news coming out of Israel. So if you'd like to join with us to get more information, and again, it's still developing. This is we just launched this over the weekend. Text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, our word for today comes from Deuteronomy 20. When you go out to battle against your enemies, do not be afraid of them, for the Lord your God is with you. So it shall be when you are on the verge of battle that the priest shall approach and speak to the people, and he shall say to them, "Hear, O Israel, today you are on the verge of battle with your enemies. Do not let your heart faint. Do not be afraid, and do not tremble or be terrified because of them, for the Lord your God is he who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you." You see, the presence of the priest was pointing to God, reminding the people of their transcendent cause, which is a purpose beyond ourselves. And ultimately, it points to the authority to whom they were accountable for their actions. And even in the United States, one of the first efforts of George Washington, he was commander of the Continental Army, was to request from Congress in 1775 for chaplains to serve in our military, to remind our men and women that they serve a transcendent cause. For more on our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible or simply text Bible to 67742. Well, yesterday, Israel withdrew all but one brigade from southern Gaza, saying the troops are resting for future missions and the war is far from over. But as Iran ratchets up tensions throughout the region, could the war spread to other fronts? And has the Biden administration's tepid and shaky support for Israel emboldened Israel's adversaries, who are ultimately our adversaries as well? Joining me now to discuss this is Carolyn Glick. She's a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on Jewish News Syndicate. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony. It's great to be back on your program again.
So let's talk about this. The IDF's withdrawal from southern Gaza was, some say, unexpected, but they've made very clear the war is not over. And a major military operation appears to be in the makings that could bring about finality of the crushing, if you will, of Hamas.
Well, I mean, I think that the optics of the withdrawal from Khan Yunus by Division 98 were very problematic, coming as they did 72 hours after President Biden sharply criticized Israel in his conversation with Prime Minister Netanyahu and hurried his administration sped to get the contents of that conversation out to the media in the most pejorative and insulting way possible towards Israel. So I think that that ill treatment of Netanyahu at the hands of Biden, and then 72 hours later, Israel pulling out its forces from Khan Yunus, sent the message that the United States has forced Israel to capitulate. And that was a problem. There are tactical rationale for leaving Khan Yunus. We don't want to be sitting ducks, and in the absence of the ability to take full control over the area, because the United States is sowing chaos with massive amounts of trucks coming in, holding God only knows what, most of which is going directly to Hamas, it's very difficult. And then that places our troops in danger. So it's possible that the better plan is to just withdraw and go in for specific raids under the circumstances, the political constraints that Israel is operating under due to the Biden administration's hostility. So that's a possibility. But the optics send a signal that was picked up immediately by Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran that the United States has abandoned Israel, and it's had a bad effect on the situation of the hostages, where Hamas no longer feels that it should make a deal with Israel because there's no reason to, and Hezbollah feels like it has a free hand to attack Israel as well because they believe that the United States no longer supports Israel.
Carolyn, while I would agree that the optics look a certain way and the media is going to jump on anything that fuels that narrative, you're very close to this, very close to the Israeli leadership. I've had conversations with them, and there's no question in my mind that they are going to see this through because they have to, whether the United States is with them or not. So the Biden administration can say what they want. It'll make it more difficult for them, no question about that. Right. But I do not see any ambivalence whatsoever among the Jewish leadership on what has to be done.
Nor among the Israeli people. I mean, there was just a demonstration by a number of groups that just formed ad hoc. They were so livid at the sense that we may be accepting defeat that they had a major demonstration outside of Gaza this afternoon in Israel to demand victory. So, I mean, the Israeli people saw what defeat looks like on October 7th and were not willing to relive that experience ever. And so the stakes are just too high. And I think one of the things that we've seen all along, and not only since October 7th, also before that, is that the Biden administration fundamentally doesn't understand the Israeli people. They think they can snap their fingers and Israel will just salute them and do whatever they tell us. But the Israeli people, particularly since October 7th, understand the implications of the enemy calls to annihilate the Jewish people. We
right.
saw what that looks like.
It's no longer...
We believe them when they say...
It's no longer... you know, theoretical or academic. I mean, that was one of my takeaways when I was walking through one of the kibbutz that had been attacked just north of the Gaza border with some of the residents who said, you know, we came from, and I forget which country they mentioned, because of the rising anti-Semitism. This was someplace in Europe. And that's been a message that's been reiterated over and over. People go to Israel as kind of the last place of protection and safety for the Jewish people. That was shattered on October 7th. Where do they go from here? And I think that's the realization that really embraces or encompasses Israelis in Israel right now that the rest of the world, at least here in America, doesn't fully understand.
Right. I think that the Jews in the diaspora in the United States and Europe and in other countries are beginning to realize it or have realized it in a very graphic way since October 7th as well, because the scale of the massacre and the savagery of what was done to Israel by Hamas and by the Palestinians of Gaza, who joined with the terrorists in the invasion on October 7th, has empowered and inspired anti-Semites of all kinds in the United States to openly attack Jews on the streets in the United States and throughout Europe in a way that nobody had experienced until now. And so the idea that Jews can be safe anywhere if they're not secure in Israel has just been shattered. It's very clear that the security of all Jews everywhere is contingent on Israel defeating our enemies in Israel. So I think that's also something that has become very clear. And I think that the Biden administration doesn't understand the seriousness of purpose, not only of Israel, but of our enemies, of Iran, of Hezbollah, of Hamas, et cetera. And so they think that they can just, again, snap their fingers and say it's over and we're going to get it to a ceasefire. And it never happens that way. So Israel isn't willing to stand down. The people of Israel aren't willing to stand down. The government of Israel isn't willing to capitulate. So I think we're headed for more difficult times with the Biden administration, and we're headed towards more war, unfortunately.
So, Carolyn, for the United States, you know, we bungled Afghanistan and our withdrawal over there. But, you know, we've got a couple of oceans protecting us. Israel doesn't have that luxury. They can't fight to a draw or just pull out of Gaza, because what that will do is not only, I mean, Hamas, you know, they're not the fiercest army on the face of the earth. They're a nuisance. They're a problem. They're killers. They're brutal. They're demonic. But you have Hezbollah to the north. You've got Iran and its other puppets that will be emboldened if Israel is not successful against Hamas. Am I correct?
Everybody's watching what happens in Gaza. And, you know, and it's really strange, actually. I mean, I guess there is a lot of ideological rigidity in the administration that's very, very hostile to Israel and willing to accommodate Hamas, which is stunning. But I think that is, it's almost impossible to not reach that conclusion when you look at the behavior of the administration in the face of the monstrosity that is Hamas, and yet they're supporting them and insisting that Israel not defeat it. So I think it's true that Hamas is a smaller enemy, but they are a conventional army. They have four remaining battalions, and they're also a terrorist organization. They're both. They're a guerrilla terrorist organization, and they're a standing army. What the force that invaded Israel was the level of it was the size of a division, organized as units with clear goals and, you know, places that they had to take over. But then their action when they took over was savagery. It wasn't, you know, just seize territory and move on. It was seize territory and murder everybody as savagely as possible. So that's different from normal armies, but it all the same, you have to look at it as such. And Hezbollah has the same modus operandi, and they're much more powerful.
They're more powerful. They're better equipped. Their armament is actually more powerful. And of course, you still have Iran to deal with. So, you know, if you don't eliminate Hamas, you're going to have to deal with the others. And so, I just don't think the Biden administration either is not connecting the dots, or frankly, they don't care, which is actually more troubling.
Right. I think that they have a Chicken Little way of looking at the world, that if they just say that there's going to be a ceasefire humiliate the government of Israel, try to overthrow the government of Israel by sowing domestic subversion and all sorts of other things, that all the problem is going to go away. If they can just blame Israel for everything, then Iran will be happy and appeased, and they'll stop bothering America at least until after the elections in November.
It doesn't happen
and that
way.
And that, of course, is not how things work.
Right.
Well, nothing happens that way. Nothing. It's not. Jews aren't responsible for what happened. We're not responsible for the hatred of others. We can only do our best to defend ourselves from that hatred. And that's what we're doing in the world.
Final question for you, Carolyn. Any way for this to be taken care of, Hamas being eliminated without going into Rafah?
No. No, I mean, first of all, it's become a symbol, but it's never really been a symbol. It's a symbol in the sense that Israel keeps saying we have to go to Rafah, and so the entire world comes down against Israel saying you mustn't go into Rafah. So it's become sort of a standoff between Israel and humanity that doesn't want the Jews to succeed. But just on the level of the world in which we live, as opposed to some sort of existential, you know, philosophical issue of whether the Jews should be allowed to survive or not, the fact is that Rafah is the last redoubt of Hamas's conventional forces, and they have to be destroyed. And from a strategic perspective, even more importantly, it's the international border with Egypt. And so long as Hamas continues to control the international border with Egypt, it's going to have the ability to rebuild its forces through arms smuggling across the border. So you can't allow them to maintain control over the international border. That guarantees that they'll be able to not only rebuild their military structure, they'll be able to enthrone themselves as the eternal controllers of Hamas and the terror mini-state that they built there.
Carolyn Glick, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today. I know you're very busy.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your program. I love to be on your show. It's a real pleasure. Thank you very much, and thank you for your support for Israel.
Absolutely, 100%.
Absolutely, 100%.
Folks, to find out more about Carolyn and her work, go to tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, just got a couple minutes left, but I want to address the issue of President Trump's announcement today regarding his position on abortion in this post-Roe world. Play clip number 10, please.
This 50-year battle over Roe v. Wade took it out of the federal hands and brought it into the hearts, minds, and vote of the people in each state. It was really something. Now it's up to the states to do the right thing.
Well, I've posted my full statement on this earlier today on my Facebook page as well as on Twitter. But let me just say this. I applaud President Trump for bringing us, this nation, to this pivotal point of being able to restore the fundamental right to life in America. And I applaud the president for all the work that he did and has done as president. But that work is not over. And this is not simply a state's issue. This is for every level of government to protect the unborn. I know the president, I support his call to make America great again, but America will never be great politically until it is good morally. And we cannot be a morally sound country when the most innocent in our midst are not protected by our laws and welcomed into our world. And so we must continue as pro-life voters to vote for those candidates who will uphold the sanctity of human life. And sometimes that choice is not as clear-cut. But I appreciate what the president has done, but let's build upon that work to continue to advance the sanctity of human life. And at a minimum, there is consensus at the federal level that there should be no funding or facilitating of abortion. And I call upon the president to make that very clear, that we will not fund abortion in America. And we will work to move America one consensus stone at a time to the next point, to where we eventually will get to a place where every child from the moment of conception on is protected. Well, folks, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you for joining us, and until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you have prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.